Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the LEGIONPODCAST. I am Murray, and this week I am an agent of coat. Cold outside, always trembling. Oh, it's brutal. It's brutal. I had the best winter coat. Like, it was one of those Colombian jackets with like lining and a hood. Like, they're amazing. And I had
the real deal.
Yeah, years and years and years and years. And eventually you got to get a new coat. And I thought I got one that was comparable, but it is not. It is not. It's the dude at the store was like, oh yeah, you can totally wear this outside to minus whatever. Like, all right. It looks very thin, but I'm down with thin if it keeps me warm. It doesn't. Mm-hmm.
Well, and the thing is, like, when, like, you're lucky, like, this. So this was a recent thing looking for this coat.
Totally. Yeah. And I mean,
okay. So here's the thing. Like, you're looking for a winter coat in winter. I mean, Murray, that's the worst time.
I know. I know.
This drives me crazy. It's like, you know, the time of year that my kids need winter coats is, I don't know, winter.
Yes.
And then try to find one. Forget about it. It's like, oh, well, we had those in October. You know, now it's all spring jackets.
Yeah.
I bought one for myself in, I think it was September. And I just thought, I'm going to buy it now. I can get the size I want, the style I want, whatever. But this retail game is crazy.
I know. Oh, my gosh. I mean, I look good, but I'm out there shivering like crazy. So. Nice. Thank goodness this winter has been fairly mild so far, but I figured
very lucky. Yeah. It's supposed to start getting colder, so.
Gross.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's me. I'm out there shivering.
Sir, I was done with winter in November. I thought to myself that first day as I brought out the scraper to scrape off the car in the morning. It was, you know, and it was like literally the first day there had been any indication of winter.
Yes.
And I took the thing out. I finished scraping my car and I said, will this endless winter never stop?
Oh, you know.
Sir, I am so with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, folks, I am Paul French, and I am a cataloger of nine, as we'll be talking about tonight. So not in new expectations, because these are all of the things that were happening before, some of which have come back.
Totally.
As we learn. But we're going to be talking about stuff that was, you know, before everything was going away, and then it went less away and became more now. And so we're going to get to all that. So I had like a, you know, on the other show, I am often segue lad. And so I needed to have an actual segue for this.
There you go. Perfect. Perfecto. All righty. Well, folks, we are using this episode as sort of like a little bridge between Rebels old and Rebels new. Rebels where it ended and Rebels where it's going to pick up. 10 years later, 13 years later.
It's not far off that. Yeah.
96, 2006 to 2000.
Yeah, 13 years.
13 years later.
13 years, like the age of my kid, who was born in 2009 when this second Rebel series started. Ooh, it all ties in.
Oh my gosh. That's wild. That's
crazy,
wild,
right?
Think about it. It is. Oh my gosh.
It was literally the first year that we started the show, because when we had Tony Bedard on in 2009.
Oh, that's right.
in the 40s or something. So it was definitely the first year of the show, and that's why we had him on, is because he was writing this book and we talked about it. And it's crazy. Like that. So, you know, this feed is started right around when this title started. And so we need to kind of have some context for what's going on in this book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. All righty. Let's.
We've been through a few universe changing events since the first Rebels series. And so now we get to get into a bit of that.
Totally. We came in with Rebels, like right with Zero Hour. And
yeah,
the end of One Legion. And by the time Rebels number two starts up, we've moved on two more legions.
Right. Like, crazy.
World Faze won't know what hit her. Although I think by this point she was phased out of legions.
Yeah, I think that was the case. So yes.
You guys, it's
a
shame
because
eventually.
I mean she was a key character.
Yes. Yeah.
In the original series, and to me, her loss was a pretty big deal because she was kind of the for someone who showed up in issue 9, and she quickly kind of took on her role as literally a leadership role.
Totally. In, yeah. She became the organization. A core character, absolutely.
Yeah, and didn't run away nearly as much as she did in
no, well, because she totally had no idea who she was, so she didn't know she was a runner.
Yeah, Darren's got a little twitch right now. As I say that, it's like, what the hell's going on? So what, you know, in 2009. So let's like look at the year. Yeah. This was as we came to the end of Final Crisis.
Yeah.
A crisis that, you know, had mixed reception. I got to admit, I don't know that I appreciated it as much then as I maybe do now. It was, very much, shockingly, from Grant Morrison, a meta event. And
totally.
And you know, when I realized toward the end, it's like, this is what he was talking about before. Like this idea of the DCU as sort of a living, breathing entity. And it was maybe a little esoteric for the average reader of the time.
Yeah, but, it was up there. It was ambitious.
Exactly. Some other things that we had sort of right after that, we got the Faces of Evil. Because every now and then we need to do a series that kind of takes on the bad guys. And yes. Where we will have like an Underworld Unlimited, as we dealt with at the end of the last series.
Yes. Yeah. We got to focus on the new villains.
And so it was like villains, you know, we had like, there was a Black Adam issue. We had Solomon Grundy. Oh my gosh. These are the ones. No, that was 2009. Okay. It was on the show last night, we were talking about ones that the late Jason Pearson drew covers for. I don't think they were the Faces of Evil ones. I think they were an earlier New Year's Evil or something like that.
That sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but there was a Solomon Grundy. There was a Prometheus, a Deathstroke, a Cobra. And then there were issues within the various series. You know, Justice Society. They had, yeah, that was a Black Adam cover. And what was the Justice League one? I'm trying to remember now. See if I can find it. Justice League, it was I have no idea. Starbreaker.
Oh, I have no idea right? what that is.
It was not. Yeah, they went deep cuts, apparently. yeah, but yeah, so you had all these sort of different characters, you know, and Booster Gold had Enemy Ace. Because, you know, Enemy Ace is a noted Booster Gold villain.
Absolutely. He's way up there in the Rogues Gallery for Booster. To be fair,
that was a series where he was traveling around through time a lot. I think I had stopped buying the series by then because I didn't remember that until it just popped up as I found it. Superman was in the midst of the... new Krypton series, and we'll talk more about that shortly. And so that was a Lex Luthor issue. Shocking, right? Shocking. What? What?
Superman and Lex? What? Crazy.
Batman had Catwoman.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and also they had like the Salvation Run series was going on. And,
right. Oh, right? That was a series that fell off the rails so quickly.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, so that was Faces of Evil. We also had Origins and Omens. So the idea of Origins and Omens was that you'd get. Stop me if this sounds a little on the nose, but you would get origin of a character and then an omen for the future. Yes. And so, for example, like Adventure Comics Zero, which had a traditional take on the cover from Adventure 247. And this was drawn by Aaron Lopresti, and it's a great cover. And it basically had a reprint of Adventure 247 and an Origins and Omens on Lex Luthor. And, right. And so what it was it was basically a thing where they would try and, they would show an origin story for someone and then kind of lay in something that they were going to get to in that year. And it's kind of like that thing that Johns used to do at the beginning of a series where he would have like those four panels of things you can expect for this year.
Yes. Yeah. Which is a cool idea. It's cooler I like it. If you actually it, get to it, those it
lets
things.
You,
but
lets you feel like there's a, well, yeah, whether or not it actually happened, it's a whole other thing. But it was kind of a neat setup for a series. Where it's like, oh yeah, maybe something's going to happen with this, yeah, I mean, you know, and certainly in his adventure issues, you know, there were some Legion things that he set out that never came to fruition.
No,
but you know, again, it's an idea. It's an idea, yep. And. And so, yeah, so there were a bunch of those and, you know, like in Action Comics, the, you know, again, like this was Superman during that whole time on New Krypton, which was, you call it, James Robinson was writing it. And this is actually when Mon-El yes. came to the series at some point in here. Like a lot of stuff happened in this mm-hmm. time.
Yeah.
And as supporting characters, we had Steve Lombard making a return. but it also had the apparent death of Mon-El.
Right. Oh, right. He did.
He took over the book. I mean.
Yes.
So, yeah. So a lot of, you know, interesting stuff going on. And another thing that happened was at the end of Final Crisis is everybody thought Batman died.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And of course, we knew that at the end of Final Crisis, we saw him in a cave making cave paintings. And so we knew he was all right.
Yeah.
And I actually recently reread the Return of Bruce Wayne series. You know, one of those go into the dollar store and find a $30 trade for $5. So it was one I picked up and reread that. I mean, a lot of great artwork. You know, it was all of the kind of the expected Morrison collaborators of the day, like a Yannick Paquette or a Chris Burnham and that sort of thing. So some great artwork to go along with these stories where it's like, you know, here's Batman in caveman times and
run and, with it.
You know, getting into a fight with Vandal Savage and here he is as a pirate and, you know, all these sort of things that we had seen in the Silver Age, you know, where it's like, what if this happened? And only they wouldn't call it that because, you know, but you know,
imagine if this happened.
Yes. Just imagine. And so they had a lot of those and it ended up being kind of a fun series. But in the meantime, we had Dick Grayson as Batman. Nothing new there. You know, I mean, we already saw that after Nightfall.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. Where it was Dick and Tim. And in this case, it was Dick and Damian. So there was a different dynamic for sure. But, you know, you had Damian, who is and always has been a Legionnaire. I'm legally obligated to say that every time I mention his name. as are all the Robins, of course. And so a bit of a different dynamic there, for sure. And this was where we kind of saw the early days of Pete Tomasi working on that book. And, of course, he would continue that later on, along with some great work on Superman. But at this time, that's what we had.
Mm-hmm.
And then Tim Drake became Red Robin. Midnight in costume.
This early? Wow.
Yeah. It's crazy looking back like this, right? Like, I mean, and so then on the Superman side of things, as we've alluded to, but really we've just kind of straight up said it, is that this was after the whole General Zod comes back thing. You know, when Johns did his series with Donner.
Right.
And it was a few years before, but you know, it's a Johns book, so it took this long for it to all come out. You know, it's Johns and Frank. I mean, you know, hey, you want it good or you want it quick? one of these things will happen, and it's not the quick thing.
No,
not always the other thing too. So they did that, and so we had Zod, and we had this other planet that they colonized, basically, and so. Superman leaves Earth and basically goes to keep an eye on Zod essentially and deal with this whole new Krypton thing. And so, you know, off he goes. And so he needs other heroes to step up. And so he had, you know, obviously there was Supergirl. There was, wasn't there like a new Nightwing of Flamebird too?
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'd forgotten all about them, but there was.
Yeah. And then of course we had Guardian and Mon-El. And this was, you know, this led into Mon-El becoming a Justice Leaguer and all that kind of stuff. You know, that was kind of later, but yeah, so the Flamebird thing, God, I gonna be honest, I had mostly forgotten about that until I read it here.
I think they were like, were they like Kandorians? I think.
They were, because the whole thing was like it was Kandorians that had isn't that crazy? You know, all these oh man, I had completely forgotten about that. Yeah, there they are. That's them, all right. And there was like they did like a whole you know, Silver Age thing of it, and so it gave them a chance to, you know, re-release trades of the two of them, and all that. But yeah, I had completely forgotten about this. Of course, you know, the in the Silver Age they had it was Van Z and Akbar. And it was like, you know, a bunch of stories that showed up in Superman Family, and it was like Kerry Bates, Paul Kupperberg, and you had guys like Schaffenberger and I think Marshall Rogers drew one of them as well.
Oh, that would have been something.
Yeah, and probably some Kurt Swan in there, because you know.
I'm
It
sure.
was Silver Age Superman, and I think it is against law to mess with that. And so yeah, so they had it, after the so Jonathan Kent had been killed during that New Krypton that like during that series. Like that, what's it? Johns and Donner series, and then they got into this, and there was a new Nightwing and Flamebird who appeared to stop two of General Zod's followers who were living on Kandor, and wanted to stop him from releasing him through from the Phantom Zone, and they had different powers. So Kara was, yeah, in Supergirl 6, Kara Zor-El has assumed the Flamebird identity to fight crime in the city of Kandor, along with Power Girl as Nightwing.
Wow.
Like, this doesn't trigger with me. Like, I'm looking at the image and I'm like, oh, I didn't remember that. Wow. Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So anyway, so that's the so that's what we see, but then we end up with a different Flamebird. Like, so they did their thing, and then we had Thera Akvar. Again, it was a female character, and so she took it over, and wow, that's crazy. Because remember, we also, you know, the Flamebird thing also played out in Titans, right? Where it was just the name
Yes.
of it that became the Betty Kane Batgirl, right? She was Flamebird to Dick Grayson's Nightwing. Get it? Yeah. And so, and Chris Kent was the new Nightwing. Lor Zod, right? He was the kid. who turned out was Zod's son. And so Christopher Kent was so here we go. So okay, so now we have it. Now we got it. Nightwing and Flamebird. All right. We got we've had the Supergirl and Kara thing, but that was a couple of years before. And then in this, we get the whole trying to stop Zod from being let out. And we end up with a Flamebird. And in this case, Flamebird is actually the leader as opposed to whereas before, because they were basically the Batman and Robin of Kandor. Yes. Right. Originally, yeah. It was Superman and Jimmy Olsen. And then you had Vanzi and Akvar, who where again Nightwing was the leader and Flamebird was not, and he was the sidekick. And so here now the dominant partner is actually Flamebird, and she's Thera Akvar, who is the chief of security for New Krypton, and Allura blames her for Zor-El's death. And wow. So Thera frees Chris Kent from the Phantom Zone, and he becomes the new Nightwing. And this is a reference to, Thera's name is, of course, a reference to the pre-crisis Flamebird and his wife. So the Flamebird identity is based on a mythical Kryptonian creature whose existence is intertwined with that of its partner beast, the Nightwing. Thera possesses a connection to the Flamebird, having had dreams and visions involving the creature for most of her life. And so that's what we had there. And I can't remember who was... So writers-wise, you had Johns, Robinson, and Sterling Gates.
Right.
Right. Remember right, that was right, when right. They started, that's when they started that Sterling Gates and Jamal Igel Supergirl, yeah, which is on basically the like golden standard, right?
Absolutely. It's a great run.
Yeah. Yeah. And Robinson and Johns were doing their thing, and that's kind of what led that. And as Johns and Robinson collaborations go, to me, not quite as strong as them on Stargirl.
That's a good pairing there. Yes,
but it was a hard directive, right? What I do love is that they involved the Legion in Mon-El, and yeah. And this is where we kind of got the retro boot Legion sort of coming back, and it was sort of the Johns version of it. Before then, it was just like, okay, so let's enough with your Element Lad is Superboy's teacher, enough. We just have the Legion in the 30th century, like enough.
Yes. Yeah, yep,
and
yep.
Tenzel runs the delicatessen in Metropolis. Oh, good lord!
Yeah.
It was not a solid time, was it?
It was a tough time to be a Legion fan, for sure.
Absolutely. So that's what we had going on there. Now that we've figured out the whole. Jesus, Nightwing and Flamebird, which both of us have completely forgotten.
Yeah, yep.
So this is the thing, kids. Like, this was a...
DC was at a totally different place in the 10 years, 11... In the time that it passed, DC was at a totally different place.
Like, absolutely. And... So that was going on. Hey, let's talk a bit about some creators who actually left us that year. George Tuska.
Oh.
who, you know, may we may remember from the story where we learned how Lightning Lord's hair went gray.
That is true. A classic.
Absolutely. We also drew, obviously, a lot of other stuff, but including in the Adventure Comics Digest when they did the Challengers of the Unknown series in there.
Yeah.
But also Rick Estrada, who drew, he drew some Legion issues. And I remember that was one of the first Legion creator deaths that we noted on the other show. Bill Jaska, who was not my favorite artist. He was the guy who took over from Grummet on Titans.
Yeah, that was a hard transition.
It's not strong. Anyway, so those are... and Frank Springer. You know, Frank Springer, who is the guy who created the Springerverse, essentially. There was no Springerverse. I'm just buying time as his list comes up.
I'm thinking he was on a lot of the war books, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Am I remembering and, that right?
And did a lot of stuff. Like he was one of those guys who'd like turn up in a collection of great Batman stories, for example.
Yeah.
And yeah. Well, penciler images. How about, you know, books? How about that? You know, but like sort of the, was it the stuff that would have shown up with alongside. So, yeah, like he, you know, a lot of Batman stuff, Action Comics. I think he did some Secret Six stuff in that. Yeah, so Frank Springer.
Oh, like the original Secret Six? Yes, I think he did.
Yeah. And when they did the, what's it, like the, oh, where is it? Yeah, so like he did a lot of the, like there was like a speed, there were some Speedy stories in Action Comics Weekly that he did. And, you know, some stuff for the Demon. And yeah, lots of stuff like that. And I seem to recall him being doing like some sort of, you know, wackier Batman stories where that you'd see in like a best of kind of thing. So yeah, like the greatest Batman stories ever told. He does a couple of stories in that, and did some stuff in Detective Comics and House of Mystery. So a lot of the horror stuff as well. And I think, as you say, some war books as well. Our Army at War was a lot of him. And some early Batgirl stuff. So like in the Showcase Presents Batgirl, he was part of that. And, you know, Batman Volume 3 and 4 from Showcase. So that's going to be sort of, you know, 68, 69 era Batman.
Yeah.
So, you know, a good 40 years before all the, before this year in which he passed. And yeah, like I'm trying to remember the one, the one that always kind of stands out to me. Oh God, this isn't going to give me the kind of info. But those greatest Batman stories ever told ones, they do choose some great stuff, and I think it's like. Yeah, that's not going to help at all. Oh, well, you know, read some Batman, kids. There's a few.
Totally. Can't go wrong with that.
Hey. All right. So what else was going on at the time? Well, we were about to get a new Legion book, as you say, like in a, it changed on a dime.
Yeah. Because Rebels opens with a little cameo from Brainy, Three Boot Brainy.
Yeah.
But he won't be around for much longer.
Yeah, but let's look at that, because certainly as we kind of set the table for Rebels, it was the Three Boot. And this was the Three Boot in which Supergirl went to the future and joined the team for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was around the time, like, so this was right after Infinite Crisis, you know, it was the 1 year later, and Supergirl is with the Legion, but then she's also in her book. And this was when she and Kara did their Nightwing and Flamebird thing.
Yes.
Like, yeah, she is Power Girl, I mean.
Yeah.
And that book was rough. rough. It started out with Loeb and Churchill, and it was inscrutable. Yeah. Absolutely inscrutable. And this was, you know, just after we'd had the whole thing in Batman Superman, where Loeb and Mike Turner, the late Mike Turner, had finally, like, it was, you know, DiDio was on a superhero ride for DC, and he gets off it and he's reading all the origins, and it gets into the whole Matrix origin and the Angel and the everything for Supergirl, and he's like, what the hell is this? I thought she was Superman's cousin. And so he went back with a mandate, like, Supergirl needs to be Superman's cousin, make it happen. And so that's what they did. And this is where we got the beginning of the idea that that she had actually left Krypton before him and had been delayed.
Yeah, I never understood that. That never made sense.
It seemed an unnecessary thing. The original idea of Argo City being an area of Krypton that kind of was protected and made it off Krypton.
Yeah,
it worked.
Yeah, totally. That makes sense.
Yeah, and this whole because she's technically older than him, but she seems younger. It just is. It's just an oddball thing that doesn't land well. And so that's kind of where we were at. And yeah, we had the Three Boot, and like the Three Boot, which I believe in. It would have just been coming to an end, right? Because of course, Final Crisis. Right, and in Legion of Three Worlds, it was revealed that the Three Boot was from Earth Prime.
Right.
Had their own Legion comics. Or in all kinds of comics. So yeah, that had just come to an end. That's right. And messy time to be a Legion fan and try to explain the continuity.
Totally. Because, yeah, like, Legion had just ended pretty much right when Rebels was starting up. So,
yeah.
Which is probably why they didn't go with calling it Legion, because they just canceled that book. So,
Oh my God. Yeah. Can you imagine? Like, oh.
So Rebels makes sense. It just means we're going to have Vril Dox lose control of his team again. Right. Poor Vril. Gets his team back and then loses control.
Yeah.
And they had hardly been seen. Like, they had hard Legion had hardly been seen. Legion, L-E-G-I-O-N, had hardly been seen.
Totally.
In the 13 years. They flew off into the sunshine at the end of Rebels, and then we don't really see them. Like, that kind of closes the book on the cosmic part of DC for a while. Then the Green Lanterns kind of come in, and they steal the cosmic spotlight, but Legion just kind of stays in the background. They pop up in the Adam Strange miniseries.
Yeah.
Just before Infinite Crisis. And they, I mean, Docs shows up and we learn it's just Docs. And we learn that it's mostly Docs and a bunch of robot android officers because they follow directions so much better than people.
It so kind of makes sense.
Yeah, we don't get to see any of the other characters. We don't know if they're still around. Infinite Crisis, they show up. But it's really just like background panels, and nobody did really any research because the characters that showed up are characters that haven't been with the team for a long time. So,
yeah,
it was just, you know, they're there because we want people to remember that Legion is still around, but it's not really, they're not going to be the focus of anything.
Yeah, and as I mentioned, like, so we had the new adventure comics starting, right? And and most of that, like, you know, so we had like the first issue of it was in October of that year, and it ran for a few issues, and it was, and what it was the story that that Mike Shoemaker co-wrote, or as he tells you. He'll say had a couple of ideas, but basically John's wrote it. And I think he's being humble with that. Cause I think he, you know, he was kind of a, you know, here's a bunch of ideas, and yes, John Zen ultimately wrote the book, but it was like through sort of their conversations that he kind of got their direction with it. And these were illustrated by Clayton Henry. And yeah, it was basically like four issues.
Yeah. And they were good little stories. They were good, fun little character bits that would have been fun to have seen followed up or whatever. But
I liked the idea of like seeing, you know, Lightning Lad looking for his brother. And you know, all of the little bits that they kind of set up. I liked what they did with, you know, setting up Sunboy and Polar Boy as kind of
a team. That's a fun mix. And
it is. And I mean, Levitz did continue a bit of that.
Yes.
But, you know, it was, and so there were some neat setups in there. And I would have liked to have seen where they were going to go with it. But then, you know, John's got the Flash again,
and Levitt's got the Legion.
Yeah, yep. it was these guys kind of returning to home ground, right? And and so it ended fairly quickly, and certainly again, like in that year. You know, then we got the John's Manipul Flash book, which was kind of the return of Barry Allen, and
yeah.
God, you see so many things in those early issues that it's like, oh yeah, this was like all kinds of setup for the TV show.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, and you know they and so when they. Got to like New 52 stuff. It was kind of I don't know that it was as strong. You know, the stuff that they set up in that for the in that first series really was kind of the template for what the Flash TV show would become. And, you know, there were some variations on it in there, though, but there was the whole Patty Spivot thing, which they kind of briefly messed with, but didn't go anywhere, which was poor use of Chantel Van Santen.
She was
TV Patty's definitely better.
Yes. Yes. Much better. Much better. Yeah.
And so we've got a DC universe where they're trying to set up a bit more of the cosmic side of things.
Yeah. Green Lantern was just hitting his swing, getting into the different colors, cores, and lanterns, and And that was going to like sweep through DC in just another year or two.
Oh, yeah. Huge. And yeah, because this was like, was this when, were we into Blackest Night yet? Or was
not
it
quite
still
yet.
Sinestro War.
It was still kind of, yeah, Sinestro War was kind of playing around in the background there.
Yeah. Yeah, the Sinestro Core War ran, oh God, no. That was 2 years before.
Oh. Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yes.
So this would have been when we got into like Blackest Night. Which again, in my view of it, is literally like right after.
Yeah, Blackest Night comes pretty quickly, I think, in Rebels Run. I think Blackest Night hits pretty early.
Blackest Night ran June 2009 to May 2010.
Okay.
And that blows me away that it was that long after, you know?
Yeah.
Because Sinestro War was honestly, it's the tricks memory plays on you, because the way I remember it was, it was like, you know, I almost remember it as though it was Sinestro War and then the next issue was Blackest Night. But of course, Sinestro War launched new creative teams on the titles, mm-hmm. and they probably got to play for a little bit and start building toward Blackest Night.
Well, and yeah, and they also, like, Sinestro War really pumped up like the Yellow Lanterns and the yellow rings, right? But then they started introducing
the idea of different rings, exactly.
Yeah. So each, well, not each ring, but like the Red Lantern certainly got a storyline, and
oh yeah,
I can't remember if orange. I don't know. They certainly focused on a couple of the colors before diving into Blackest Night, and then certainly totally. A lot more afterwards. Yeah,
and I think that you know, I mean, because we look at Blackest Night, you know, I mean, it started here. And ran through to May 2010, but Brightest Day came out of that, and yes. Really, Brightest Day was more of a thematic thing as opposed to Blackest Night, which was a huge crossover.
Right.
And I mean, Brightest Day kind of led us right into New 52. So when you look at it like as a through line, like you know, Sinestro War to through to New 52, that was like 4 years.
Yeah.
But it was a lot of the action that was happening. I mean, you know, you had the Blackest Night series, which basically was issue zero and then 8 monthly issues and then a ton of tie-ins, including yes. in Green Lantern and Green Lantern Corps.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
you had like Tales of the Corps. You had all the Blackest Night, you know, one-shots, like Blackest Night Superman and Blackest Night, it was 9 3-issue limited series. So you had Tales of the Corps, Blackest Night Superman, Blackest Night Batman, Blackest Night Titans, Blackest Night yes. Wonder Woman. Yeah. Blackest Night Flash, Blackest Night JSA, and these were separate
series. Rather than running through the books, they had
yes.
separate minis.
Yeah. Wow.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it was a lot.
It was.
Lots of characters coming back, and oh my gosh, I had forgotten about a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I don't know. What else do you have for 2009? Anything stands out for you?
I'm just trying to do a quick scroll here. Birds of Prey was just ending, I think. Like, it was coming to the end of it.
And then she was moving into Secret Six.
Yes. Right? That was around that time, too.
Wow. Another one that stands out for me around this time was Batgirl. Brian Q. Miller wrote it, and it was... Stephanie Brown is Batgirl, and I gotta say, I loved that series.
Yeah, lots of people did.
Yeah, it was one of those things where it was hard to lose her at the end of it, because she ran kind of right through to the end.
Yeah,
and I think Brian Miller was like, I think he was a writer on Smallville, and then did some Titans work, and then moved to this. And I guess it was Phil Noto was the sort of the artist of record, as it were. But I see other names on the issues as well. And it was a good book. It was a really good book. And I see that now they've got all of the Batgirls back, and she is one of them. Which makes sense. Lee Garbett. Sorry, was the artist.
Yeah, I wonder if Phil Noto was covers, maybe.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And the covers were fantastic. It was a good book. And I think the whole thing was that, you know, Oracle was a bit of a... a mentor to her as well. And, but you know, I had missed Stephanie as spoiler. I didn't read a lot of that. So this was all kind of new to me.
Yeah.
You know, I'd heard of her, but hadn't read any of the stuff with her. Mm-hmm. And, it was a good book. And, so an interesting time where we were seeing some legacies being collapsed and other legacies being expanded. So it was very interesting in that over in Green Lantern, it was like, nope, it's.
We are not talking about Kyle anymore. It is all Hal all the time.
It's so Hal. Yeah. So Hal it hurts, and mm-hmm. And in Superman it was like, well, it's not Superman, it's Mon-El, but he's got a little tiny Superman logo, so that's good, right?
Totally.
And then you got the in the Justice League. I mean, God, Justice League was like, Donna was Wonder Woman, and Dick just, was Batman. Yeah, just
before this, I think. And then this might be like around the time that Dwayne McDuffie had the book. I think in 2000.
Dwayne McDuffie had it right after Meltzer.
Yep. Yeah, I think so.
So he had like the first two arcs were like, Meltzer did his sort of introductory thing. Then it was the Lightning Saga, and then it was McDuffie. And that was around the time of the, Green Arrow and Black Canary.
Yeah, they get married coming out. They get married. They get their series. There's like a,
Mike Norton shout out. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Legion of Doom. They do Legion of Doom. I think that's who they do. The Justice League.
Yeah. I'm trying to see it on my shelf because I do have those ones. And McDuffie died in 2011, so it's going to narrow down the timing. Yeah. All right, so Justice League. He was only 49 when he died. Dang.
Yeah, very, very young.
So his issues were 13 to 34. So November 2007 to August 2009.
Yeah, so and, just kind of wrapping up his run there.
Oh, I got to find the... he got fired from the book following a Lying in the Gutters compilation of his very frank answers.
Yeah.
About the creative process. And
yeah, the difficulties of working on... company-owned books.
Oh, it's not available. Dang it. Who earns? So, yeah, he did that. And so who wrote 35? Tell me that.
Is that when Robinson took over? Did Robinson come on after and lead it into...
immediately after that?
I can't remember if Robinson led them into Flashpoint or not.
Oh, see, Robinson would have been writing it around New Krypton time because that's why Mon-El was in the book.
Mm-hmm.
All right, volume 2, number 35. Here's where we find out. Len Wein.
Yeah, Len Wein does some issues.
Yeah, did not expect that. with Tom Derenick, and next issue was, of course, a Royal Flush issue. Because that's what you do when you got no more ideas with Justice League. Totally,
bring in the Royal Flush gang. Yeah. Yeah, by issue 38, Robinson popped on. So that's where...
So was that soon, yeah. Okay. And that was a tough run. I appreciate what he did. Oh, yeah, it was with Mark Bagley. So I think they started double shipping because, you know, Bagley can draw a book that fast.
Yeah, absolutely. It was an interesting read.
They were trying something different, and yeah. It was a tough run, but, you know, there's a lot to it. And there in 39 is a Blackest Night.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I loved the at the end of it where he kind of got a little meta with the, hey, we tried this, we tried that, you know, it was, and basically it was his way of saying, hey, this was a tough go. They told me I couldn't use Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, or, you know, basically all these characters that he could not use.
Yeah.
And that is a tough run.
But by the end of it, I feel like it was kind of coming together. Like he had some interesting characters there, and he was finding their voices. Right towards the end. Like, for me, it was kind of bumpy. It took a while, but I think I appreciated it by the end.
Because didn't he have, like, Dr. Light and Firestorm?
I don't remember them. I know Vixen was in it. And
yes.
And Kongorilla. Starman was there, like the blue Starman.
Yeah. Yeah, because he'd been in Cry for Justice. Yeah.
Oh, right. That led into it. Yeah. Eek.
Yeah.
That was not great. That was not great.
Because they were trying to do that whole... it was messy. They were trying to do that whole painted artwork thing. Ugh. And... If you don't have, if you're trying to do an Alex Ross type book, have Alex Ross do it.
Yes.
all these times they tried to, like, let's do an Alex Ross type thing, but we don't want to pay Alex Ross page rates.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah, so in issue 41, Donna Troy joins the team, as does Dick Grayson, as does Mon-El. You still have Dr. Light. You got Vixen quitting the team. Red Tornado is having a rough time of it. Starfire joins the team. Cyborg joins the team. So yeah, it's the new Teen Titans.
It's the Titans, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yes. And, yeah, so that's... you know, well, I've said often how I feel about the whole Cyborg on the Titans thing. The Atom joined the next issue, as did Black Canary and Green Arrow and Hal Jordan. And yes, Kongorilla, Shade, and Starman showed up. It's an interesting run, and now I kind of want to read it again just to see what I think, how I feel about it this many years later. Because then in the next issue, Adam, who had just joined the team in the previous issue, now leaves the team, as does Black Canary and Cyborg. Kongorilla joins the team. Dr. Light leaves the team. Donna Troy is still there. Green Arrow, however, leaving. He quits. So does Hal Jordan. So does Guardian. So does Mon-El.
Yeah,
so does Starfire.
It was a revolving door for a while.
Oh, my gosh. That must have been so frustrating to be just like, okay, I'm going to put these characters in. Oh, yeah, we got other plans.
Yep, yep. Write them out again.
Good grief. Crazy.
Yep.
All right,
that's
so there we
kinda,
go.
Yeah, that's kind of where the DCU was at.
Messy is what we're saying. Messy.
Indeed. Indeed, indeed.
But that's okay, because we're going to, you know, just to kind of give a little setup. You know, we got a fun series coming up.
We do, and I had forgotten just how fun it is. So buckle in, Buttercup.
Yeah, you know, it's we got Tony Bedard, we got Andy Clark doing art, if I remember correctly.
Yes, we do.
And it's some great looking art. And I think Claude O'Bannon works on some of it.
I think so. Yep.
Who used to do Captain Canuck way back in the day?
Oh wow!
Yeah. Like that was a surprise then, where it's like I recognize this name, and then I got that Captain Canuck omnibus, and there he is. He was all over it, and so Rebels guys, you got Tony Bedard, Andy Clark. As I said, Jose Villarubia on colors too. So
yes, nice. Yeah, it's good. All right, folks. Well, that wraps it up for this week. You can always send us a note, an email at legionofsubstitutepodcasters@gmail.com, or hit us up on the Facebook group. Also, Legion of Substitute Podcasters. And then there's the website, legionofsubstitutepodcasters.com. All the places, all the things. Alrighty, folks, we will see you next WEEK.
LATER.
And this is where Al would throw a whole bunch of letters at us and make us think it's some sort of farewell.
It's really just a letter salad, isn't it?
It's totally a letter salad.